I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But they love eating people. They love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. I've seen a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. I am the great and powerful Mr. Ree.
And I'm J-Clone 10.
And today, we have a short little story about a she-monster.
Ooh, a short she-monster?
A short she-monster story from Iceland.
Ooh.
So, this is one that's interesting.
Is Iceland in the Arctic Circle?
Yeah.
Okay.
Some of it is, I believe.
Okay.
So, I'm going to try to read its first name, like its actual Icelandic name.
Okay.
So, Uran, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I didn't ask you about this beforehand. But this is the Forjoriel, or the Shore Laddie.
Oh, I like that name better.
That's the rough English translation.
Or the Shore Laddie. Mm-hmm. So, is he from, like, Ireland originally?
A Scandinavian, like, so it's a Scandinavian language.
Okay.
They spread out through all those places.
Well, the laddie word, you know, that's always Irish to me.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
I don't know. In my brain, it is.
And I'm using an article from SG Taz because this is all the information I could find on it.
Ooh.
I went through tons and tons of stuff. There's not a lot on this thing, at least in our versions of the internet.
Gotcha.
Even like, the Monster Museum of Iceland Sea Monsters used this person's work, this Taz.
And this is all you can find?
And the Cryptid Wiki was all their work also.
Oh, wow.
So, like, at least page, like, 8 on Google, 99% of it was her, or I think their work.
Okay.
Like, yeah. It was the same thing, copy and pasted.
Okay.
On their website.
Yeah, all right, well, let's figure this out.
There's not much to it, but it's really cool. So, did you know that most of Norse myths were of, now I can't talk today.
Yeah, what's going on? Tongue-tied.
The Norse myths we know and love were not written in Scandinavia, but in fact were written in Iceland.
Ooh, they started up there?
Mm-hmm. But it's true. Apparently, Iceland is one of the most literate countries in the world. And they took charge in writing down the stories of Odin, Thor, Loki, and the rest.
Hmm.
So, yeah, this is a big thing with, like, a lot of Norse mythology and stuff like that. It was a lot of oral tradition, and a lot of it got lost.
Yeah.
So Iceland was the big charge of putting all that stuff down into writing.
Oh, okay. I was say bring it back or recounting it
no,
or
like,
what?
As it, like, writing down their religions and their thoughts.
Yeah. Well, I know, doesn't Iceland have, like, one of the hardest languages to learn, I'm pretty sure?
I had one of my Spanish teachers in college was Icelandic.
Yeah.
He spoke, like, 15 or 16 languages.
Oh, my gosh.
Because Icelandic is extremely hard to learn, and there's two versions of Icelandic language.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
And he was trying to explain it to us. There's, like, a kid's version.
Like, that's he's complicated.
Like, best is, like, slang.
Right, yeah, like ours. We have that.
But if you're an adult and you talk like that, they're going to look at you like you're dumb.
Right, yeah.
And they're both extremely hard to learn.
Okay.
So that's why he learns so many languages, because he's, like, everything else is so much easier.
Right, yeah. This is easy after you do this.
And he's like, in explaining like root languages and stuff like that, like when you learn French or you learn English, how many languages are built off of the same alphabet or the same core symbols,
right?
Or
yeah. Whatever. It's funny you say that though. That a lot of that originates from Iceland, because I remember seeing this documentary about us modern man now, are you know, current inhabitants of the Earth, but that people came from the North Pole and spread out their knowledge from there, that point, and out throughout the rest of the world as the world thawed out from the ice age or whatever. It was just this really cool
I've heard similar things.
It was this cool documentary about it, and I when I first watched it, I was really fascinated, and then I wanted to go back and rewatch, and I can't find it anymore.
Would that be like giants or what?
I don't know if it... No, I don't think it was that. Just that's where... when the world froze, there was a place of refuge up there.
I think that's Behrman's Law.
Yeah, I don't know for sure.
I mean, that's why giants... I mean, that's one of the biological things why giants would make sense up there.
Just to stay...
Is Bergham's Law, something like that.
To stay what?
Mammals specifically, but with animals, the further away from the equator you get, the bigger your body mass is.
Gotcha. Because
it's easier to stay warm. It's easier to find food. It's easier to travel long distances.
Yeah, I can't remember what this documentary said, but I think it was like maybe the North Pole at one point was like a tropical paradise kind of place. And then when everything froze, they kind of got landlocked up there, but and the world froze. Then as it thawed out, they spread out and spread their knowledge. But it's just funny that all the origins come from Iceland, you know, very up north. I just wonder if there's something to it. I don't know.
So, the sea laddie.
Yes.
So Norse mythology, or sorry, Scandinavian mythology has all kinds of sea monsters and land monsters and mountain monsters and sky monsters.
Mountain monsters?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they have a wild bill they too?
Woodland Ulis, which translates to wild bill or bill of the wild woods.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. I like the Icelandic twist on it.
Yeah, Icelandic twist. There's too many letters in Icelandic words for English. But no, so the shore laddie is a very odd and probably one of the most random one in that group. And there are a lot of them. I highly suggest people look up the Icelandic sea monster chart.
Okay.
Because there are some crazy ones. And I think it's, I don't know if it's season finale worthy or like a 2 or 3 part special just going through like the Icelandic monsters.
Like our mid-season specials we kind of get into every now and then.
Yeah, where normally like 2 or 3 parts or whatever.
Yeah.
Because it's, Iceland has some weird ones. This one, there's just not a lot on, but it's talked about. And it's just like most of the sightings are, yeah, we've seen one.
Right. That's it.
That's it. So, sightings of the shore laddie date back, as far as written language goes, to about 1700s. For us in the U.S., that may sound like a long time, but considering the country in Iceland has existed for over 1,000 years, the shore laddie is a baby by comparison to many of the other sea monsters that call this place home.
Okay.
So, for this, you know, it's only been seen for 300 or 400 years, at least in the written language.
Relatively new guy.
Yeah, which is odd, because a lot of these sea monsters, I mean, they talk about, I mean, Jormungandr and some of the other big sea serpents.
The world serpent, whatever.
There when the world was created.
Yeah.
In their mythologies. So it's, for this guy to be talked about so much and to be very new, it's kind of interesting when you kind of look at what this creature may be.
Okay.
But yeah, the shore laddie is a baby by comparison. As the name suggested, it's a shore dweller. It's frequent to beaches on the western fjords. One of the sources say it resembles a sheep that has fallen in the drink or a fat woolly seal. But yeah, so that's one. I'll read the other description of it too. So there's one where it's kind of like a seal, kind of not. When it's drawn, it is drawn like a big aquatic animal, but it actually has legs. Here, so it's brownish-gray fur with muscles and barnacles growing along its back, a feature which lends it to be as called like a scraper. When it walks, it makes a sound of like the barnacles and stuff rubbing on its back.
Okay.
It is, to any unwary travels, it may be alerted by its presence of these beasts if you hear the scraping sounds walking up and down the beach.
Gotcha.
The shore laddie has been described as both having webbed and hoofed feet. At the same time.
Webbed, hooved feet.
Yes.
That's good for swimming.
Yes, it is.
Keep going. I'm formulating it in my mind.
Although which version is most accurate is heavily debated. Nobody knows what the shore laddie actually is. Some people actually think that the Montauk monster that washed ashore.
Yeah.
May be a shore laddie.
That's kind of what I was kind of thinking at first. Or the globster.
Yeah.
Is that what the same thing, right?
No, no, no.
Oh, they're not?
No. So globsters can be anything. There is a famous globster from like Gloucester or however you say it.
Yes, yeah.
But that was big.
Oh, okay.
These guys are like sheep-sized, people-sized.
Okay.
A couple hundred pounds. They're not huge. I mean, they're big, but they're not like a whale hauling out on the beach.
Hmm. Interesting.
And a lot of times they say that their barnacles are often entangled with lots of seaweed. And it's so that's not an actual part of their body. But
okay.
When they come out of the ocean, they look like they're made of seaweed. Because their stuff grown on their back just hooks up to all the plant life in the ocean.
Okay, that makes sense.
So what kind of powers and abilities do you think this thing has?
Powers?
Yeah, so a lot of these, especially cryptids and mythology,
oh, true.
Will have some stuff attributed to them.
Supernatural characteristics. This guy, shoot, I don't know, but maybe he brings good luck.
Oh, there you go. So like a lot of other Icelandic cryptids, the shore laddie is pretty much a keep to itself kind of creature. You don't bother me and I won't bother you. It is advised, though, if you see one, you just kind of turn the other way.
Okay.
Some witnesses have described aggressive behaviors, being chased with like a honking, a deep honking sound like coming at him. Almost like similar to like how a pig would charge or something like that, like
okay.
a wild boar.
Yeah.
Like very scary. But if you didn't move, they probably get you, but they just want you moved. They
right.
You off their little
They're pitch. Pushing you yeah. off, yeah.
While others claim it will retreat into the water when it is seen immediately.
Okay.
So it has both sets.
It's like a squonk.
Hmm.
Oh, here we go.
Hmm. It is like a squonk, isn't it? In fact, the only power or ability this thing has said, other than having the raw hubris to exist in the first place, like the squonk, it can choose to impregnate sheep during mating season. And this will result in deformed lambs.
Yeah, that's kind of a freaky quality.
Now, we can come back to that if you'd like. Not a super useful or fun ability, but you have it. This thing gets blamed for deformed baby sheep.
Oh, okay. Well, that explains that.
Do you want me to go into that now?
I'm guessing it's just
behind it.
Kind of a folklore.
Yeah, so what happens in these sheep herds, what can happen in these sheep herds, especially in islands and stuff like that, in these cultures that are very spread out. You can have inbreeding inside of sheep herds, and the more inbreeding that happens. So it's called straight line. Have you ever heard anybody talk about straight line breeding? That's inbreeding in animals.
Okay.
That's the fancy term for it.
Oh, okay.
That's called straight line breeding.
Is that what they do with dogs to get certain characteristics?
Yes.
And then now they're like unhealthy, like bulldogs?
It's called straight line breeding.
Oh.
And depending on like what animals it is, you can do it one time with no real threat. And then, but if you do it again, then it, you know, problems go up. So a lot of times that they will have problems if they don't sell and trade sheep with other flocks relatively
right.
often.
Right.
I mean, every couple of years or
mixing
so.
Mixing genetics.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And cause a lot of these, ranchers, farmers, shepherds know that.
Right.
That if I don't bring in new ones and change out old ones every once in a while,
we're going to have problems.
Yeah. So there seems to be that. I think this thing was getting blamed for that, that they would see one and then that season they'd have a bunch of inbred sheep babies being born.
Yeah.
I don't think this thing was impregnating the sheep.
Like Mothman and the Silver Bridge.
But why this thing maybe got in some trouble is that when it would come onto the beach if the sheep were close, it would sometimes follow the sheep around.
Oh, okay.
It would never hurt them, but it would just kind of follow around the flock of sheep. It wouldn't leave too far from the ocean, but then like the grass goes right up to, you know, the ocean.
Did this thing ever display like aggressive behavior eating things?
No.
I didn't think so.
My next thing is diet.
Okay.
There seem to be herbivores.
Oh, wow.
So they have really like scary heads.
Yeah.
Where some people say they even have pretty impressive tusks, like a wild boar, but they have much more of like a hippopotamus face with some big teeth, this big flat wide mouth. Like you alluded to, some of the art depictions of squonk are actually kind of similar to these guys if it was more aquatic.
Okay.
But kind of that hippo head with some tusks coming out of it.
Okay.
And they can be kind of aggressive, but people have seen them grazing. People think they eat the seaweed. They seem to be pretty slow moving with growing the barnacles and stuff on their back.
Right.
Like
yeah.
a sea turtle, dugongs, whales, those kind of animals will grow barnacles, you know, too.
Tumor seals.
Tumor seals, yeah. So if you wanted to defeat a shore laddie, how do you think that would happen?
To defeat one?
Yeah. If you're one of those guys, I'm going to prove my worth. I have all these Icelandic monsters to go conquer. You know which one I'm going to get?
The shore laddie.
The shore laddie.
Yeah.
It's literally like saying, I'm going to go beat up a squonk.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Maybe not exactly like beating up a squonk because this thing doesn't melt.
Right, yeah. It puts up a little resistance, at least.
It'll run. It'll charge at you every once in a while.
I don't know. A big spear would probably be just enough all you need.
So as far as we can find, fighting a shore laddie resembles fighting a waterlogged sheep.
That's a pretty good description.
Even if it's angry or agitated to see you, it's not particularly fast, and if it decides to attack at all.
So it's not a deadly thing.
Yeah, it kind of moves on land like a seal.
Unless you're
not as dramatic, like a sea lion.
Okay.
So for everybody at home, we've talked about the differences between seals and sea lions. Mm-hmm. Is sea lions still have like the back hips and the feet they can place under, so they can actually kind of walk, when seals have to like do the worm to get
around. Gotcha. So I think we just covered that on the leopard seal Freaky Fauna Friday episode.
Oh, probably. That was a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So this thing is more like a sea lion in its movements.
Okay.
Where it has the four appendages, but they're not great on land. So they're not really fast.
Yeah.
But they're definitely more active on land than a seal is. If it's agitated and it's running at you, what are you going to do?
Just take one step to the side.
Pretty much. Just loud noises and wave your hands in the air, and it'll probably scare the bejesus out of it, and it'll run away.
Yeah. Or if you're fighting it, you just do a double foot stomp onto its back, right on the barnacles.
99% of people say that this works.
Oh, okay.
That when they've ran into shore laddies, and they're still seen today.
Huh.
People, especially going out like fossil hunting and rock hunting and stuff on the beaches by themselves.
They're still seeing them.
They'll run into them every once in a while. Keep in mind, there's tons of sea life in Iceland. Tons of shoreline sea life.
Okay.
A bunch of seals, walruses, polar bears, all kinds of things. And every once in a while, people still see...
The shore laddies.
Shore laddies. But so people say the 1% of people that has an aggressive attack say the creature will kind of just puff up and do the threat displays.
Mm.
And then if you keep challenging it, it'll leave. And they even tell people not to worry because it's a vegetarian. They say it makes one very disturbing exception to being a vegetarian, though.
What's that?
Pregnant women.
Oh, okay.
It's said... It will actually been recorded of instances of such thing. In fact, one of the tour guides swears vicious rumors and reports of the aggression, claimed to have encountered one when he was 14. According to this reports, it seems that a terrified human could not get away fast enough, that it was trying to get one of the pregnant women in the group.
Hmm. That's kind of crazy.
Again, I think that may be just...
part folklore.
Attributing reactions to, it's because she's pregnant.
Right, yeah, true, yeah. Because, unless there's some, like, hormonal thing she's letting out, pheromone, why else would it?
No, I mean, this thing is cool. I mean, it's still seen. I got ideas of what it is.
Ooh.
But before we get into that,
yeah.
Once again, we'll do our sponsors.
Flavors of the Forest. Bigfoot Breath. Garlic seasoning with a hint of salt.
We can't talk today.
No, I can't. But we've been, they've been our sponsor of our show.
Like 2.5 years now?
Yes. And I tell you what, I mean, I sing this the praises for this product enough, but it truly is, if you like garlic powder, this is the best premium ingredient for quality and just taste in general. It really is the best garlic powder option out there that you can buy. And it goes a long way because you don't need as much because it's so strong. But it's pure garlic. There's no chemicals. There's no filler. There's nothing. So it's good for you. And it lasts a long time because it's freeze-dried. Flavors of the Forest, Bigfoot Breath. And it's all garlic seasoning, and they got all sorts of different flavors to choose from that enhance every single dish you can even imagine. So Flavors Forest. .com/corn to get you a bottle.
Remember, take a kid fishing. Join the future angler, or sorry, the junior anglers.
No future.
Oh, right. No, I was right, finally.
Yeah, you've actually got it right.
Future anglers of Indian Lake, Ohio.
Yes.
The links are below for all this amazing stuff. Check them all out. Support them if you can.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
All right, you ready? Mm-hmm. So what do you think this thing could be? What do you think a shore laddie is?
Well, the webbed hooved feet.
That's very important. Or it's not.
What if it is just a sheep that went feral and lives an aquatic life?
There you go. So a sea haggis is the first thing I have.
Ooh, a sea haggis.
The AI, they always do these videos of haggis in their natural habitats.
What's a haggis?
Haggis is a dish.
Oh, okay.
A Scottish dish.
Okay.
Where it's sheep stomach.
Oh, that's right.
Stuff with other organ meats.
Yes, yes.
And I hear that it's very delicious, but the smell is very strong.
Mm.
One of those foods. Like, I've had nice cheese like that.
Fair.
Where the cheese is horrible to smell, but a very tasty cheese.
Mm. Interesting.
But yeah, so waterlogged sheep. You just think people from distance see a sheep that maybe rolled off a cliff, landed in the water, and just, it's coming out.
Yeah, maybe.
That's an option.
Yeah. It lived in aquatic. You know how pigs go feral?
Yeah, there you go.
When sheep go feral, they truly are an aquatic species.
They go back to the ocean.
Yep, immediately go back. They get the barnacles and the web feet.
Start devolving instantly.
Yep.
Touch the water, turn back to fish.
Get tusks. That's sheep.
Simple. I love it. There we go. I won't even read the rest of them because you got it.
See you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
Yeah.
No, it's the waterlogged sheep. Sure. From a distance, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know. Probably not.
A lot of these people see these things really close. So Iceland is amazing. It has, I think, right around 77 species of mammal.
Okay.
And most of those are marine mammals.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The land mammals, there's a lot of domestic cows and horses, Icelandic horses. But there's polar bears, Arctic foxes, mink, weasel. I'm trying to think of any other. And caribou.
Marmot? Reindeer. Any marmot?
I don't think there's marmots.
Okay.
But reindeer are pretty much your only big land mammals, and hares. I think there's Arctic hares, too.
Okay.
The rest of that 77 is marine mammals.
Wow.
Including a plethora of seals.
Ooh, you think this is a seal?
Now, no and yes. So, depending on which description of the sea laddie you get, or the shore laddie, I'm sorry.
Shore laddie.
They have white woolly fur,
mm-hmm.
like a sheep. And some of them are described as not having that whatsoever. There's like two or three animals that may be getting called the same thing.
So, it's an umbrella term, could be.
Yeah. I kind of think it is an umbrella term. So, one of the animals I think that could be getting mistaken for a shore laddie are baby harp seals, which are native to Iceland.
Baby harp seals?
So harp seals and harbor seals, and they have hooded seals too, which we'll come back to hooded seals. And walruses are kind of their sea lion or seals. The baby harp seal, though, is the famous one.
Okay.
That is white and fluffy as a baby.
Okay.
And you see them on the ice sheets and like all that stuff. But this is the, you know, more western part of Iceland. So there's a chance that maybe people are out walking in the morning and they just see this. I mean, they're fairly big, but they're fluffy and they're white, but they can be kind of dirty. You know, they go in the ocean, they come out of the ocean.
Right. Yeah.
Mom's normally off getting food and the baby tries to hide. And if you get too close, you know, they may just jump in the water. So all you've seen was this big white fluffy thing. Like it looks like a sheep.
Right. Yeah.
And it jumps in the water.
Yeah.
So there's a chance that that's some of these sightings.
Could be
because some people really talk about like the shore laddie doesn't really let you get close.
It's a skittish animal.
Yeah, it's very skittish. But a lot of the seals are very skittish because they still have an active hunting policy on seals.
Gotcha.
Which a lot of the native Icelandic people and stuff, they sustenance hunt seals.
I was going to say they need to.
Yeah. So seals, you know, there are hunted. So they're traditionally more skittish of people.
Makes sense.
So you're not like, I'm not seeing somebody's walking up 10 feet from a baby harp seal and looking down and being like, oh, that's a shore laddie.
Right, yeah.
But 50, 60, 70 feet away, you just see this white thing, dart into the water real quick.
And it's, oh, it's a shore laddie.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially if you've heard that they're white and fluffy like right, a sheep. Right, yeah,
exactly.
Another thing that goes back to this is that seals and sea lions are famous for falling in love with livestock.
Ooh, okay.
Specifically, sheep and cows.
Didn't we talk about like a
an elephant seal, in Australia? They go like 800 miles upriver every year for breeding season because he loved all these cows.
That's insane.
And he'd fight cars and stuff like that.
That's insane.
And then New Zealand has an elephant seal too that's like, oh, what's his name? Nate or something like that. That causes trouble. Like people have to call the police to get out of their house because he'll lay in front of their door.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Like 2,000-3,000 pound animal.
I want to be that kind of like disruptor.
Yeah, and people enjoy him, but he'll like knock mailboxes over and stuff like
right,
that.
Right, yeah.
Because I think the council there talked about putting them down a couple times. And the town's like, no.
Right, yeah.
What else town? Because they're not near the ocean. They're up a river.
It's always the town councils.
It is.
That want to ruin things. Because it's disrupting their lawns.
Believe you me. So this is kind of the thought. Maybe they are misidentifying some seals. But I'm not saying that this is the close range sightings. But if you're out and you see something in your flock of sheep that's hopping and wobbling and, you know, jumping around out there. And you know it's not a sheep.
Yeah.
And you get close and it darts back off in the water. You know, that may be some of the shore laddie myth.
Right.
And this could be why a lot of this didn't really pop up until the 1700s. Because the native peoples were much more acquainted with the wildlife.
They're aware of what it is. And yeah.
Because they directly depended on it more so. Than modern day.
Than now, absolutely yeah. Now.
Because there's almost no farming in Iceland as far as crop farming.
Okay.
You know, so it's meat. You know, like a lot of your diet is meat. If you watch any of the shows with like Icelandic culinary stuff, that's a lot of meat, fermented meat, dried meat, because that's what you got.
Seal blubber.
I mean, yeah, they chew on it like bubblegum.
Ooh. It'd probably be good.
I told you about Frank with the seal's eyes in Alaska.
Yeah, aren't then they say like gushers or
kids beg for them because it's the jelly in the eye is like super sweet.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. So it's like a treat.
Oh, I have to ask my dad. Wonder if he tasted his eye jelly
when his eye exploded.
Exploded and he had his in his hand.
Probably not. I don't think he was at least thinking about it.
Probably not. No, he said he thought it was his eyeball. He thought it was gone.
So what do you think of the seal theory?
I mean. The baby seal, the baby harp seal? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that could be one of them too.
So another one to add on to this is another type of seal. It's called a hooded seal. So it's think of a small elephant seal.
Okay.
Where they got the big, not as dramatic, but they puff up a big nose like a hood.
The proboscis.
Yeah. It's not exactly their nose that hangs down like an elephant seal. It's a space on their skull that they inflate.
Like a turkey's...
it's called a snood on a turkey.
Yeah, turkey snood. It's
kinda,
like
kinda, but they puff it up with air. Turkeys do that with blood.
Oh, okay. They do it with air?
Hooded seals do it with air.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How do they get air up there?
It's in their nose. It's part of their nose.
It's part of their nose still. Okay, makes sense.
So they puff it up, and it turns red, and they hang it out. And I do think they maybe flush blood to it to turn it red.
Oh,
but it's
okay.
Not full of blood.
Right.
It's an air sac, essentially.
Yes.
And same thing with elephant seals is they do puff it up a little bit, but a lot of theirs is...
Muscle. Yeah.
Like they just make it bigger.
Okay. Now, you're doing the motions above your head. I'm just thinking it coming out of the top of its head.
In between the eyes and the nose.
Right. Yeah.
When an elephant seals is like at the end of their nose.
Well, I'm just picturing someone that like has a bubble on top of their head and they can blow it up with air. Like, how? But, oh, yeah, it's still part of the nose. Makes sense.
The nasal cavity is huge.
It's like plugging your nose and blowing it up. I don't know.
Kind of, yeah. So these guys generally are also extremely timid. They're still hunted. The exceptions are they are darker colored. They can almost be black and brown. They get mottled fur.
Okay.
They will chase people in breeding season.
Okay.
So that could be some of the like the more aggressive encounters.
But how do these explain the hooves and the barnacles?
They
and
don't.
Okay. Fair. Good answer.
They don't. So, the next one, it was just adding on that there is another odd species of seal there that does odd things.
Okay.
Especially, I think some of the more last 100 years are much more tourism-based sightings. So, I think it's less people that are maybe familiar with wildlife. Because one of the places when you go to Iceland, you stop, there's a museum called the Sea Monster Museum of Iceland.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's one of the first things you do when you get to Iceland.
You got to see the sea monster.
And they have a big thing about the shore laddie.
Gotcha. Okay.
So that's kind of in your head.
Yes.
So if you have a scary encounter with an animal, you don't know what it is and it looks weird.
I remember
it's a shore laddie. Yep. You know, it was on the shore. It rah, honked at me, chased me a little bit, and I ran into the ocean.
Right, exactly. Shore laddie.
Another one. Now, this one's weird. So, a hoofed webbed animal.
Right.
So, manatees, dugongs, and sea cows have their toenails still exposed, their fingernails still exposed, and webbing in between them.
Okay.
There are old depictions in the Atlantic of sea cows and manatee-like animals coming onto land and basking like a seal. Now, with the East Indian manatee, like the one we have in Florida, and the Amazonian manatees don't do this. As far as I know, I think they can kind of, like when they're little, pull themselves onto the shore a little bit to eat. And even when they're bigger, they can a little bit. But there's a lot of artist depictions from like the 16 and 1700s before they really started killing a lot of them.
Yeah.
That manatees, a species of manatee would come onto land. Not like great distances or anything like that, but these little hops and lay on the beach like a seal would and then crawl back in.
Great. Or, what's the word? In the sun.
Basking.
Basking in the sun, yeah.
So they have the webbed hoofs. You know, from a person that doesn't know what they're seeing, they have these big, thick fingernails.
Right, yeah.
With webbing in between them.
Right, yeah.
So they look like a hoof, but they have webbing. They can grow stuff like barnacles and seaweed and all plants on their backs.
If they're moving slow enough.
Yeah, it depends on, yeah, which things they're doing. But even dugongs that are fast moving grow a lot of plant material on their
back. Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know
their
that.
Their backs will be green.
Yeah, like a loggerhead snapping turtle.
There you go. Sure.
There's a reference for you.
But so what if this is a mysterious species? I don't know if it's baby stellar sea cows or, because we talked about there seems to be an Atlantic species of stellar sea cows.
That's like missing?
Yeah, that's missing.
Yeah.
And that there were depictions all across crossing the Atlantic from the 14 to the 1800s of these random islands that would have manatee-like animals, not sea cows, manatee-like animals from the Arctic all the way down to the tropics.
Huh, okay.
So they used to just assume they were manatees, the East Indian manatees.
Yeah.
Or sorry, West Indian manatees.
Yeah.
They would just assume that they were them out in the ocean and we just never found them again and that the sailors ate them all, which
probably happened.
I mean, they probably happened, but yeah. I don't think it was West Indian manatees. I think it could have been
the Atlantic.
Atlantic Oceanic version. Manatee.
Right, exactly.
And I think there could be the cold, like maybe colder hardy. So that there may still be sightings of these guys, or they maybe were pushed up there in the 1700s due to whaling.
Last refuge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's when the height of whaling.
Right, yeah.
The 1600s, 1700s, 1800s.
Oh, yeah. We need lighter lamps.
Yeah. When did these guys pop up? When did this, you know, pop up over there, the 1700s, 1800s?
Hmm.
So what if this was a small population of these Atlantic Island manatees that were just trying to seek refuge?
Yeah. You know,
they're being persecuted, essentially.
Their last
place.
They're
running somewhere.
Right, yeah.
Because the Atlantic current drops them off there.
Okay.
So there's that big current that circles the ocean.
They could have got hunted in their secret seagrass patch and got pushed out. Yeah, and now they're there. I could see that, yeah.
And there still could be some out there. So the Atlantic, and we talked about that actually in our Bermuda Triangle episode, where the Atlantic Ocean will literally have miles of seagrass pop up, like lifting ships out of the water, and these guys will be stuck on them for days until they sink and disappear again.
Wow.
And people used to think they were living islands. We talked about it in our Bermuda Triangle episode that in the 1700s, that was famous, where they thought it was like sargassum is what it's called, you know, a bunch of plant matter.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you think of that? The Atlantic Island manatee.
Well, it makes more sense than a sheep or a... Or the other, the seal theory, but I mean, because it actually has the quote unquote hooves. Okay. So that's, I think that's a big part of it.
This next one, you've never heard of, I guarantee it.
Oh,
I'll be impressed.
Try me.
The Des Moistulus.
Oh.
If you can describe what it looks like to me.
A tassel worm.
Yes. So these guys, we have a lot of their fossil remains. They're one of the only extinct clades, or sorry, they're only extinct families of mammals.
Hmm.
Like, they're all gone.
Okay.
Which is really weird.
For that entire clade.
Yeah.
Like, for example, what's another clade?
Well, here, let me make sure I'm saying that right.
Okay.
I'll just read you some facts about these guys.
Okay.
But these guys look like ocean hippos mixed with a seal.
Well, that kind of fits the description, doesn't
it? They literally have hoofs. Like, they have long fingers with these big hoofs on the end.
Yeah.
They have webbing in them. They have a big, wide head, and the males would have these tusks that come out of their mouth.
Well, that kind of fits.
And they have a big, wide, flat face, and they were herbivores.
Well, that's what you were talking about.
Huh.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
It is kind of weird.
And they were shoreline animals. They would swim out into the ocean to feed on like marine grasses and stuff like that. Then they'd bask on the banks.
Like shore laddies?
Like shore laddies. Odd. They like shallow coastal waters. And their fossils are found all the way from Alaska, like the Alaskan Peninsula, Canada, and the United States all the way down to Mexico. These guys were like hot water just as much as they liked cold water.
Right. It didn't really matter.
Yeah. They were more like orcas in that sense. We'll talk about their extinction because it was really weird. On average, there were several species of these guys. Desmoistinus is how I pronounce it, but it's like Des, D-E-S, most, Y-L-U-S.
Okay. Mostilus?
Desmoistinus?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a scientific name. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
So these guys were odd. On average, there were several species, but the average species was about 9 feet in length, 4 feet tall. And they were very dense. They were more like a hippo where they'd walk along the bottom. They could swim. They had these big paddly hands and flippers. They would look very uncoordinated on land, like a sea lion.
Yeah.
But they could go, I mean, not quick, but they could move on land pretty good.
If they needed to.
You could outrun one. Okay. But if they could, they would make a beeline and get back to the ocean pretty fast.
Kind of like an alligator or a crocodile?
Yeah, I think they could stand up like that, but their bodies are much more designed for aquatic habitats.
But if they wanted to run really fast, like short bursts, they could.
So it's an extinct genus. I'm sorry. It's a genus of herbivorous mammals.
Okay.
That lived from the late Oligocene to the Miocene. They were massive and heavily built marine animals, and they belonged to the family Desmoistolidae. There was a particular animal that was interesting appearance and has no living descendants. This makes it difficult to trace lineages and describe many of its habitats in details, because a lot of what we do with paleontology is look at living animals and say, okay, well, this is a living similar thing. But I highly suggest you guys look at them because I'll show you a fossil of one.
Oh, cool.
So okay. It's like a mini hippo seal baby.
Yeah. Interesting. But
these guys, the genus are herbivores. They lived between 28 million years ago to 7 million years ago in conventional time scale in the Pacific Rim, North America, Asia, South America, and the Arctic. Nobody knows why they went extinct. It's kind of a mystery.
Okay.
They were competing with animals like the giant marine ground sloths when they went extinct and stuff like that. There are many ancient whales that have these guys in their belly.
Oh, cool.
Megalodons would eat them. They were pretty big. Their genus name means chain pillar, referring to their cylindrical alignment of their back teeth. They are large creatures similar to hippopotamuses in appearance. The largest member of the genus was 9 feet in length, 4 feet tall, and weighed 3,000 pounds.
Mm.
So short and heavy.
Yeah.
But they had some smaller relatives.
Okay.
They had a short tail with four powerful legs that ended in hoofs. They had webbed hoofs. This is one of the few animals I could ever find in the fossil record that had webbed hooves.
It's just a weird term.
Oh, it's it. They are primarily marine mammals. They adapted to allow them to spend most of their time in the water. And there are some evidence suggested they would even like spend their time out in the open ocean for extended period of times, coming to land very rarely.
Okay.
So another thought I had reading all this stuff and looking into these guys is the shore laddies may be their babies of the big ones.
Ah, and like the nursery areas.
Yeah, that they have to stay on land for a little bit. Because walruses do this. Walruses, as adults, almost spend their entire lives in the open ocean.
Right.
They almost never touch land. The only time they do is when they're breeding.
Babies, yeah.
Because they have babies.
Right.
And same with a lot of, like, oceanic seals and stuff like that, and some sea lions. So I think these guys may have fallen into the same thing, where their offspring would have to spend a couple months kind of hanging on the shore while mom and dad, or maybe just mom, I don't know, you know, their family units.
They're dynamic.
But maybe out off the coast a little bit, diving for squid, or they're herbivores, so diving for plants and stuff like that.
Right, yeah.
There's some evidence that suggests they maybe even ate, like, mussels and stuff like that. Like, walruses have a specialized mouth that literally suck mussels out of the shell.
That's crazy. I bet you they did if they're still around.
So their legs were, so their bones and their lower forelegs were fused together and made it quite a rigid appendage. So their whole bottom of, like, their hand and the bottom part of their leg.
Fused, basically.
Was fused. So it really didn't move at all. But it made it really difficult to walk on land. But it had made them great for swimming, unlike hippos.
Okay.
So even though they were dense, they would actually were really good at swimming.
They wanted to be in the water.
Their upper and lower jaws were elongated and fused to form frontwards facing tusk. They use these like giant shovel-like appendages to, you know, get to plant matter.
And dig up plants and whatnot. Yeah.
Yeah. They also had two tusk-like teeth that would come down from their upper jaw that they probably used for either sexual display or fighting.
Okay.
So those teeth that everybody was describing when they were saying tusk. We have some of their poop. They look like they ate mostly all plants. Any shells, we kind of think that they were accidental eats. Just like scoop when they were scooping up big mouthfuls
right,
of plants.
Yeah.
There was crustaceans in
but,
it.
But I guess herbivorous sea animals do eat like mussels and crustaceans. Yeah. I think anyways.
One accident a lot of times.
Yeah.
On purpose. They don't matter.
Or yeah.
So these guys lived everywhere. They lived. We only found them in America, Russia, Asia, and the Arctic. But we think they were ubiquitous across the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
And we don't know why they went extinct. They just kind of vanished from the fossil record. No big indicators.
Like a lot of things.
But yeah.
Yeah.
And we talk about that fossils are extremely rare.
Right.
And marine creatures are even more so extremely rare. It seems like these guys maybe liked water about 100 feet or less.
Okay.
But they would stay out there year round.
Well, that makes sense though, because I mean, you're not going to get too much plant life.
Yeah,
going any deeper 30, than that.
30, 40 feet is kind of
right,
the max for big plant life. But there are massive kelp forests and that kind of stuff out there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think of these guys?
I played Subnautica. I know how big those kelp forests can be.
What do you think of these guys?
I've never heard of this before. This is, I learned something new today.
I told you never knew these guys.
No, I've never even heard of anything like this.
So these guys fill a similar niche to like stellar sea cows, Sirenians.
Right. Yeah. I can see that.
So typically besides the stellar sea cow, most Sirenians are tropical water lovers. This may be the cold water.
Maybe the flood made all the shallow areas rare, so they got hunted to, like, you got bottlenecked, and now that this is just all that's left.
Yeah. So they blame competition for their extinction, but it really only makes sense in their southern ranges.
Okay.
Because there's no, even the giant aquatic ground sloths and the Sirenians, like manatees, really didn't go north and like north to the cold waters.
So they wouldn't be hunting them up there. Like, or they wouldn't be on the menu.
They wouldn't be competing.
Right, yeah. Competing. Oh, okay.
Because that's what a lot of people blame their extinction on, is competition.
Okay.
But it doesn't make sense to me, and it doesn't make sense to a lot of other paleontologists.
Mm-hmm.
So their extinction is still left as a mystery, and I think there's a chance that these guys may have not ever went extinct.
They're still there.
And these are one of the few marine mammals that could spend, you know, extended periods of time in fresh water.
Oh, okay. Brackish.
No, like fresh water.
Just play on, straight on fresh? Okay.
Yep, their skin was a lot tougher. So the osmosis of like pulling like salt, that's one of the big things with marine mammals is salt, stuff like that. But they still need fresh water. Manatees have to go into fresh water.
Oh, okay.
But they still need to go out in the ocean to feed.
Hmm.
So yeah, I think there's a chance that these sea or shore laddies are these guys that are maybe still hanging on.
And how do you say their name again? I'm sorry, but.
No, it's okay. It's Destmostylus.
Destmostylus.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never heard of that.
They're very favored in people that really like to draw like paleolithic animals and stuff like that.
Okay.
Because they're so odd looking.
Yeah.
That they make fun art
as
a centerpiece.
I can see Sherwin drawing one of these.
Oh yeah, Sherwin would do a good job on one of these.
Yeah.
But there you go.
The shore laddie.
Hopefully you guys enjoyed this Icelandic monster.
Yeah, that's a new one for me.
All right. Well, I've been the great and powerful Mr. E.
I've been Jake Lundin.
We'll catch you next week, guys.
Bye. Bye.
Hey guys, thank you for listening to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye!